One thing that Wax's life in the roughs had taught him was that men would monetize anything. The first time he'd seen someone selling water, he'd been surprised. Who sold something that literally fell from the sky? Now, more than 20 years later, he was surprised nobody in Ellendale had found a way to charge a tax on collecting rainwater. If someone wanted it, you could charge for it. That went double for Alamancy, though there were some conservatives who decried the increasing commercialization of the metallic arts. Ferrochemists for hire were much scarcer than Alamancers, perhaps because terrace traditions viewed their powers with such reverence. Wax walked up the steps toward the building, which stood alone on the street in a fairly nice neighborhood of town, even if this was the darker end of the lane, so to speak. The place was two stories tall and had the window shades drawn, though light inside gave them a warm glow. A black coach with a silver crest scraped across its face was parked in the drive to the right. The soothing washed over him right as he reached the door, a calm, gentle feeling like emotional anesthetic. Like someone had pressed a pillow against his emotions in an attempt to lovingly smother them.
Ah, sloppy. Should have brought my hat.
It had an aluminum lining, and Bleeder could have access to a spike letting her soothe or riot. Well, he'd have to fetch it later. He pushed into the building, entering a room dimly lit with lamps in red shades. A scattering of men and women lounged on cushions inside, smoking cigars or incense pipes, staring at the ceiling, which was painted like a stained glass window in a pretty abstract pattern. Most businesses would be closed by this hour, but not the soothing parlors. Visiting one was more expensive than a night at the pub, but had none of the side effects. Or to be more precise, it had different side effects. A woman in a matronly gown and a hat, likely aluminum-lined, approached Wax, probably to take payment, but Wax flashed his credentials.
If you think credentials will get you in free, then you must be new to the Force.
Wax gave her a dry smile, tucking away the metal plate. She ran a low-grade soothing parlor. While what she did wasn't illegal, amusingly, it was fine to manipulate people's emotions so long as they were paying for it, she'd be used to the constables checking up on her. Not only did these sorts of places tend to attract people who were hiding from something, it was very possible for a disreputable soothing parlor to take advantage of its clients. None of the people here matched Chapau's description, but soothing parlors often had more than one room.
Short man, balding, known as Chapau, but may not have given that name.
The proprietor nodded and gestured for Wax to follow as she crossed the room, weaving between the people lounging on the floor. The dim, smoky building should have left Wax jumpy. This was just the sort of place where accidents or ambushes happened, but the soothing was difficult to pierce. It tore away the top layers of his concern, exposing those beneath, his worry for Wayne and Marcy. Beneath that, a surprising frustration, even anger, at God. Then those emotions too became as fluttering wings, leaving him hollow. Not calm, just empty. He wanted to settle into one of the chairs, close his eyes, and let out a sigh of relaxation. Bleeder would wait. Surely she wouldn't try to kill again tonight. Why worry if she did? He probably couldn't stop her anyway. He found he hated that sensation. These emotions were his. They were a core of his self. Taking them away didn't make him happy or help him forget. It just made him feel sick. He tried to urge the proprietor faster as they left the room with the cushions and stepped into a long hallway. Here they passed several other rooms. A completely white chamber with people sitting cross-legged on the floor. Another that was completely black, no lights at all. The people inside barely visible. There was even a room with painted trees on the walls, the ground covered in thatch like a terrace meeting hut. A lone man sat in this one on a solitary chair, eyes closed. The proprietor led Wax up a set of stairs. Perhaps the man in the terrace room had been one of the soothers. The parlor would have at least one in here somewhere, extending out a small bubble of soothing. Parlors were supposed to have aluminum sheets on the walls to keep the emotional alamancy contained from the neighborhood, but the rule wasn't uniformly enforced. The proprietor led Wax to a small room on the second floor, unadorned, save for a couch at the center for massages. Chapao didn't lie on that. Instead, he paced by a latched window in the far wall, frustrating the masseuse who stood nearby with her arms folded. An old man sat in a chair by the wall. The metal vials in his pocket, Visible to Wax as small diffuse lines pointing at the suspended flakes marked him as an Allomancer. Wax raised his eyebrow. Chapao had paid for a private session. Where had he found that kind of money? The coach driver stopped in place, looking toward Wax. His eyes flicked toward the guns at Wax's hips, then he fell to his knees. The aged soother rose.
I've done what I can, Mistress Halix. But this man doesn't need allomancy. He needs a physician.
He's yours. Get him out of here. He's disturbing my people.
Wax crossed the room to kneel beside Chapao. The short man shivered, holding his legs.
Chapao, look at me.
Chapao turned toward him.
What's the name of your dog?
I don't have a dog. He died a few years back.
Good enough. This wasn't Bleeder in disguise, unless she'd thought to interrogate a random cab driver about his pets before killing him and taking his shape.
What's wrong? Why are you here?
To forget what I saw.
Soothing doesn't work like that. It doesn't take your memories.
But it should make me feel better, right?
Depends on the emotions you're feeling and the skill of the soother. What did you see, Chapao?
I saw myself!
Auradel wasn't in his office, of course. That place was there, as he put it, for giving house lords somewhere to sit when they come to complain at me. Marisi found him on the roof of the constabulary offices, listening to reports from the two precinct coin shots who had been scouting the city. Marisi politely waited, with Melan and several constable lieutenants standing nearby, and was able to hear most of the latest report.
Thousands still on the street, my lord. They're congregating at pubs, not going home.
Auradel stood with one booted foot up on the short wall around the rooftop as he took the reports. Mist curled around each coin shot in a distinct vortex. It responded to the use of allomancy. Finally, Auradel dismissed the two. They weren't true constables, more contractors. Their loyalties would be to their houses, or in some cases to their pocketbooks. As they left, jumping off the building, the constable general turned to the waiting lieutenants.
Get the men ready to clear out the pubs.
Sir?
We're going to close them down. First on the promenades, then work down the smaller streets. We can't start until I get authority from the governor to institute martial law on the Octant. But I want the constables ready to move as soon as we have word.
The lieutenants ran to obey. Auradel glanced toward Marisi, and she thought she saw something of his ancestor in him, a soldier who had died a martyr during the days of the Ascendant Warrior. In another era, would this man have been a field general rather than a policeman?
What do you have for me, Lieutenant Combs?
Auradel waved her forward. Melan lingered by the stairwell down, hands in her trouser pockets.
Our assassin, sir.
Marisi offered over the folder.
She dug her way out of her own grave after being executed for causing the floods in the east. They found the bones nearby a few days later and called it desecration of the grave. After all, why would they guess that one of the holy, faceless immortals had been inhabiting the body of a murderer and criminal?
So this is all her doing?
Pardon, sir, but I'd say this is rather the fault of the city's unpleasant working conditions. That said, Bleeder is most certainly shoving it along. She wanted this city to be on the brink of cracking when she made her move.
Ruin. In the face of that, it seems almost trivial whether the governor is corrupt or not, doesn't it?
I suppose that depends on whom you ask.
I still want proof. Not to diminish your efforts, Lieutenant, but I'm not going to jump at wraiths in the mist unless I can see for myself. That goes for the governor, too. Keep your eyes open. If you can find me something concrete, we'll use it once all this blows over. And I still want some kind of proof regarding your supernatural assassin.
I understand, sir.
Marisi nodded toward Melan, lit by the lanterns hanging on poles near the door to the stairs.
And I have some proof for you there, but it would be best if we could do this in private.
Auradel slowly shifted his weight backward, lowering his foot from the top of the parapet he'd been leaning on. He glanced at Marisi, who nodded.
Below.
The two remaining constables attending him obeyed, and once they were gone, Auradel crossed the distance to Melan.
I hope that my questions aren't offensive, Your Grace.
Sincere inquiries never offend human, for it is thy duty to seek truth. True questions return only truth.
Her skin shimmered, growing transparent as it had before, but somehow also giving off a kaleidoscopic sheen. She spread her hands to the sides, and her blouse somehow split and slid down her shoulders, exposing a transparent torso with an emerald skeleton that glittered in the lamplight. Marcy blinked. Well, that hadn't been what she'd been expecting. Milan's head, completely transparent, cocked, and she looked down at them with a maternal cast.
Speak.
What? Is what Constable Combs has told me true? Could one of your kind really be behind this?
Pa'alm is a lost soul, tortured by a broken mind and a twisted spirit. Yes, she is of us, human. Thy task is not easy, but we shall aid thee in thy desperation.
Great, I guess. I guess that's the confirmation I needed. Could you by any chance put in a good word for me with Harmony?
Thy deeds are thine own good words, human, and thy God knows of them. Go and protect this city. Worry not for thyself, but instead for thy fellows.
Right. I'll just be about it then. Unless there's anything more you can tell me.
Thy snoring is rather loud.
What?
It doth be like unto 100 angry Kolos in the middle of a rock slide. Lo, and it doth come near to waking the dead.
Right.
Be on thy way, human.
As commanded. Lieutenant Combs, a moment.
He bowed his head to Milan, walking around her to the side, and had trouble tearing his eyes off her. Granted, Marcy had trouble doing the same. Milan was overwhelming even when she wasn't transparent and half-naked. Milan nodded Marcy onward. No need to come back up for her. Aridel didn't stop until they were halfway down the stairs.
Well, that was strange.
I did warn you.
That you did. The bit about snoring. A metaphor, I assume. But for what? The constables? We're too loud, perhaps? We're supposed to serve the people, but the complaints of brutality and of officers ordering people around as if they were lords. Yes, I can see. I'll need to make some changes. Do you think that's what she meant?
I don't know. Meeting her does tend to affect one in profound ways.
Very true.
Aridel hesitated on the steps, turning as if he longed to return up above. He held himself back.
Question I had earlier remains. We've got an immortal killer out there, potentially trying to overthrow the government. How in preservation do we fight something like that?
You don't. Lord Waxillium will handle the Chandra. We should focus on keeping the city from exploding.
I want you to do something for me.
Sir?
You mentioned Lord Ladrian. He seems to trust you, Lieutenant.
We have become good friends over the last year.
He's a wild card, Lieutenant. I appreciate the work he does, but his method... Let's just say I wouldn't mind having a little more information on what he's doing and when.
You're asking me to spy on him.
I won't lie to you, Combs. I think you can be a resource for this department in more ways than one. It's my job to see that the law in this octant is served, and I'll feel a hell of a lot better if I know what Lord Ladrian is doing, if only so I can get the proper warrants and, if necessary, apologies, ready.
I see. You could just ask him. He's been deputized. He is technically under your jurisdiction.
And you don't think I've tried? He always promises a report. If I'm lucky, that consists of a letter telling me where he left a suspect hanging by his ankles. Do you remember that one? Or a quick rundown at a party of something he's hunting, if only so he can ask me for a loan of some resources. I don't mean to turn you into his chaperone, but honestly, a little more information would be wonderful.
I'll write you a weekly report, more frequently if an investigation is ongoing as it is now. But I will inform him that I'm doing so.
Great. Fantastic.
Aridel started down the stairs again.
Get to the governor's place and tell him I need an executive order for martial law tonight so I can clear the pubs. Suggest he send one to each of the octants. Then check in on your friend Ladrian and tell me anything he's learned about this immortal who thinks she can bring down our city.
He reached the floor below and strode out into the main chamber. Marcy followed, but her legs felt like they bore 100-pound bracers. She reached the ground floor and walked out the precinct's back door. She'd always known that her involvement with Waxillium had helped her obtain this job. If she hadn't joined his hunt for Miles' 100 lives, she'd never have gained enough notability. That said, she'd assumed her understanding of historical crime rates, her letters of recommendation, and her interview had been more important. Was that even the case? Had Aridel given her the job instead of someone like Reddy because he knew Waxillium? Did her studies even matter? She settled with her back against the wall, waiting for Milan. Rusts, did everything always have to be about Waxillium? Of course, thinking that made her feel like a child, jealous that someone else had more blocks than she did. Melan strolled into the alleyway a short time later, disturbing the mists.
Well, how did I do?
We shall aid thee in thy desperation.
Hey, it's what he expected.
Not what I expected.
I can be divine when I need to be. I've had a long time to practice.
Then why don't you use the act around me and the others?
Who says this isn't the act?
Melan met Marisi's eyes.
Perhaps my duty as one of Harmony's servants is to show people what they need to see. Whatever will bring them the most peace.
Marisi felt cold suddenly, a shiver running through her. Not at the words, but at the look in Melan's eyes, which had faded to a faint translucence, as if in reminder.
I'm just rusting you, kid. I don't show you that side because it's too hard to keep a straight face while talking with all those these and what fors.
Hence the snoring wisecrack?
Yeah, I had to check on the guy when Harmony was first looking for Palm. He snores like a steam engine, that one. Anyway, where to now?
The governor's mansion.
Along we go, then.
We pulled to a stop.
Chapao hunched up next to his carriage in the mists outside the soother's place.
And I've been hearing things inside the coach. I didn't like how he'd come out of that church with hands all red.
Wax knelt in the back of the coach, listening while he carefully unwrapped a bundle of black cloth. A lantern hung on the side of the coach, giving him light, but also turning the mists into a bloom of illumination. He could still feel the soother's touch from the nearby building, but it was far less pronounced now. He felt almost like himself. That was both good and bad, for there was nothing to hold back his sense of revulsion as he unwrapped the bloody mallet that had been used to pound the spikes into Father Bin.
I shouldn't have looked into the coach. He told me not to look, you know? But I couldn't help it. So I turned softly and peeked into the coachman's slot. The one they have so you can see if the person inside is ripping up the upholstery or whatnot. I found I hadn't been carrying a man, but a monster. A mist wraith with bones and sinew exposed, and a face of stretched muscle and grinning teeth. It looked at me, all smiles, and scrambled up toward the hole. It pressed that exposed eye against the slot, and then it changed. It changed. Skin growing over its face, like mine. A twisted, broken version of me.
Wax unrolled bones from the bundle, the corpse of the Pathian whom Bleeder had imitated in order to kill Father Bin. Bleached, picked clean, and under them a pile of cloth. Pathian robes? Yes, the colors were right.
Hands all red.
You ran after that?
Wax lined up the bones carefully.
No, I drove. I whipped the horses forward, burying that demon spawn in my coach. A driver for Iron Eyes himself. What good would it do to run? It had my soul. Harmony, it has my soul.
No, it is a trickster, a false face, Chapao. It was a twisted version of yourself, you say?
Yeah, I know what you think, lawman. I killed that priest tonight, didn't I? I went mad, and I killed him, and those bloody hands are mine. I should have killed myself, jumped off that bridge.
No. You've been taken in by a charlatan, Chapao. It wasn't you.
Wax continued, methodically laying out the evidence, though a part of him wondered what good it would do. Did traditional detective work have any place in a fight against a creature like this? How did you fight mythology with a microscope? Harmony. What if he did find a clue? If he chased her down, could he even defeat something like this? He stared at the bones, then shook his head. He would send for a crime scene team to look this over. He needed to get to the governor's mansion and check in.
Wait.
Wax leaned forward. There, on the hem of the robe, what was that? He shielded the lantern. With the lantern dimmed, Wax spotted it better. The corner of the robe's hem glowed with a soft blue light, easy to miss. Wax reached down, taking a substance off the robe and rubbing it between his fingers. A powder of some sort? What kind of powder gave off its own light, faint though it was?
Did you see anything glowing back here, Chapao?
He turned toward the man. Wax had to unshield the lantern to get him to respond. Even then, the only reply he got was a confused shake of the head.
Where did you drive the coach?
Lestib Square, where I'd been told to drop the creature off. Then I squeezed my eyes shut and waited. It climbed up to me as it left. Hands on my shoulders, head beside mine, cheeks touching. I could feel the blood, though it left none staining my shirt. It whispered to me, lawman, I will make you free. And when I opened my eyes, it had gone, leaving those bones in the passenger compartment along with a small pile of coins. I thought for sure I'd gone mad.
Wax downed an extra vial of metals to refill his stores, then dried the vial out and took a sample of the dust. Lestib Square, named after the Lord Mistborn, it was worryingly close to the governor's mansion.
Don't worry. I'm on the thing's trail. I intend to stop it.
It said it would make me free. If I'm not mad, then that means that thing was real.
It is.
Honestly, sir, I'd rather be crazy.
Wax rose and pushed Chapao toward his coach.
That thing probably doesn't want you dead anyway.
Probably?
No way to tell for certain.
Wax checked his ammunition.
But I'd bet money against it. At least, it no more wants you dead than it wants everyone in the city dead. Maybe. Not sure yet what its endgame is.
Chapao looked sick. Damn, he was sure that last part had been comforting.
Go home.
Wax tossed the man a few banknotes.
Or go find a hotel. Get some sleep. She isn't gonna come for you.
She had much bigger game to hunt.